Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
From the Society for Nautical Research, in partnership with Lloyd's Register Foundation, I'm Sam Willis, and this is the Mariner's Mirror podcast, the world's number one podcast dedicated to all of maritime history.
Hello, and welcome to our final episode of this series focusing on the maritime history of Wales. My name is Iodwen Abeli-Watton, and today I'll be learning more about Welsh shipwrecks from the First World War. During my research, I came across a fantastic project called the U-Boat Project, which has been documenting and reconstructing stories from World War I off of Wales's coast. The project focuses not only on unearthing and recording shipwrecks, such as the U-boats from the war, but also the lives of communities and families affected by this event. Our history of naval war, including medical ships and importation of supplies like food, has been hugely influential on Wales today and is often overlooked. I was extremely interested to hear more about these diverse communities and all of the stories that might have remained buried if not for the work of the U-Boat Project. Here to tell me all about the project is Dr. Michael Roberts, a marine geologist and research fellow at the Centre for Applied Marine Sciences, School of Ocean Sciences at Bangor University. Michael specialises in the application of multi-beam sonar surveys to understand physical marine processes, as well as researching sea level change around the Welsh coastline. Between 2016 and 2019, in collaboration with the Royal Commission and Nautical Archaeology Society, Michael led the Bangor team in the HLF-funded U-Boat Project Wales 1914 to 1918. This project linked maritime collections held by local maritime museums and private individuals with larger national records and archives. I hope you enjoy the episode. I certainly found it fascinating to learn about how much of Wales's naval history is yet to be uncovered and what is being done to change this. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today, Michael.
No problem. Glad to be of help.
So, if you wouldn't mind, please tell our listeners just a little bit more about Wales's U-Boat Project.
Okay, well, this is taking us back a few years now, during the period where we were sort of commemorating the World War I for 100 years or so. So, obviously, there were a lot of projects underway associated with that. But coming from a maritime background and working in marine sciences and living on the coast, it was always something that's been of interest to me, is the sort of elements or aspects of World War I activity that took place in the sea. And I don't think people are aware of the fact that, you know, much of the activities during World War I mean, people tend to think of them happening 600 miles to the southeast of Belgium and France, etc. But, you know, there was a lot of activity going on right underneath the cliffs around our coast. And I mean literally under the cliffs, which is, for me as well, I mean, it was as surprising for me as much as anything else. And all this came about from work that I'd been doing, strangely enough, associated with marine renewable energy. So we're trying to support that industry and that sector to grow in Wales, because Wales is really well placed for developing marine renewable energy projects, because it has strong tides, you know, it has a lot of waves associated with wind and big tidal ranges. So there's been a lot of that sort of effort and activity in that sector. But understanding the environment, the marine environment, is going to be critical. And I was more interested in the physical processes that are associated with putting things on the seabed and what will happen to them over time on decadal timescales. And obviously, the industry isn't created yet, it's in its infancy. But I did do some work early on in 2013-14 associated with some shipwrecks around our coast, and it struck me that there were a lot of them, a lot more than even I'd appreciated. And so we were looking at structures really to gain insights into how marine processes have interacted with structures on the seabed, as I say, and shipwrecks provided that perfect opportunity because they've been there for a long time. they come in many different forms. So they're all unique, really, I guess. They're different shapes, different sizes. They're in different orientations relative to the tidal flows. They're on different seabed types, and they've been down there for different periods of time. But also, not just from the physical side of it, there was some interest from the biological side of it. So structures can tend to act as artificial reefs. So eventually, quite rapidly actually, they become colonised by other organisms, and they in turn are predated on off, you know, the other organisms feed on them, and so fish, etc. And then, of course, marine mammals will also feed on the fish. And so there are huge concerns or issues around the development of marine renewable energy projects in Wales, because we are lucky to have those kind of animals in our environment. And the last thing we want to do is kind of endanger them or, you know, create problems for them. So understanding, as I say, the biological and the physical aspects of structures is critical to that sector. And so that's where shipwrecks come in, as I said, and I started surveying them, as I say, way back in 2014. And we've done a pretty thorough job, really, of looking at all the wrecks now around the Welsh coast. We're talking about 300-400 different sites, and many of those, the most significant proportion of those, are associated with World War One and World War Two. But also there's this heritage and cultural aspect, and that's how I got involved with the U-Boat project. So, as I say, going back to the commemoration for the World War One centenaries, we thought, well, we'd take a small sample of these wrecks and try and understand a little bit more about them, their history, you know, their sense of place in terms of the conflict. And it all came from there.
Of course, that's fantastic. And I'd love to hear a little bit more about what goes into kind of building those stories and doing that research when you find a particular wreck, and to build those individual stories.
Great. Well, OK, as I say, I think the one thing that struck us was how many shipwrecks there were. But when we actually went out and surveyed them, and I should just explain, we use a survey ship that has a cutting edge piece of technology called a multibeam sonar, which allows us to build up a sonar derived 3D point cloud or image of the structure on the seabed. And so, you know, you can see using sound, because you obviously can't use optics because the water's not clear enough, not like Bahamas or the Mediterranean, not around Wales, definitely not. So sonar's the way we look at these ships in any great level of detail. And as I say, you know, some of the data that we're getting off them, you can see masts and funnels and boilers and, you know, the shape of the ship generally, whether it's been broken up, whether it's got a torpedo hole in it, which is just incredible to see in some cases. But the one thing that did become apparent very, very quickly was when we went to a certain wreck site, which was purported to be a particular steamship, the general dimensions often didn't match. They did in certain circumstances, but, you know, we have to say a significant proportion of these vessels did not match with the dimensions of the ship that the wreck was supposed to be of. So obviously it wasn't that wreck, it was something else. And so, and there are also quite a significant number of unknowns out there. So quite often, based on ancient, older data, you know, an identity has been attributed to some of these wrecks. Probably 30% of the case of the time that they're correct, 30% of the time they're incorrect, and 30% of the time they're unknown, something like that, of that order anyway. I hadn't appreciated fully that we would obviously need to know what the ship was, because we need to know how long it's been there. If we're looking at processes, physical processes, you know, whether it's been there 70 years or 100 years or 50 years, that's critical. And that's where I started a collaboration with Dr. Innes McCartney from Bournemouth University, who's been sort of instrumental in taking this project forward, really. So I've just gone out and collected the data, basically built the pieces for a jigsaw puzzle that Innes has now been putting together for quite a period of time. And that's what it is, as I say, these wrecks, they're a jigsaw puzzle. You can't really go out and look at a couple of wrecks and kind of start attributing identities to them. You need all the pieces. And that's what we've been able to do through my project work, the funding that I've had. So we've got this lovely data set now of, you know, having the surveys of all these vessels in a given area, a geographical area. But this is just a small area around Britain, you know, where the Irish Sea, effectively. And the same will apply around the whole of the UK and wider field, obviously, internationally. So yeah, it's been a fascinating journey so far. I'm looking forward to seeing some of the results, the outputs from this later this year or early next year. And I think, you know, there have been some fascinating things. I've been drawn into it. You can't help but not be drawn to it. So I'm a geologist by trade, but I've just become fascinated with the history because each of these ships has its own story, its own sense of place, you know, and identity. And the stories, they're just incredible. And I think that links very closely or strongly to different communities. You know, there are relatives of some of these people who have lost their lives on some of these ships that are still around and want to know, you know, where they're ancestors or, you know, close relatives lost their lives. I found it quite amazing. I hadn't realized, again, you know, the technology of the time 100 years ago to have a U-boat just patrolling around our coast where everyone's going just farming or what have you, and literally within a few hundred meters of the cliffs these U-boats were waiting. So obviously in wartime these ships are transiting through those shipping lanes up the Irish Sea into Liverpool, etc., or down to Cardiff. But they would have to do it, because they knew that there were many U-boats around, they would have to do it under cover of darkness. They wouldn't have their lights on, necessarily. So they would be travelling in the dark. And, of course, the U-boats then couldn't see them, unless the U-boats came in really close to the coast and then looked out to sea against a horizon to see a silhouette of a ship passing on the horizon, and that, so that the U-boats were even closer than the ships themselves to us. And that I just found that quite amazing.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And as you just said, it's not only the ships that you're looking at, but also the communities that built up around that. And with any project involved with, you know, the sea and sea travel, you get communities from all over the world, really. So I'd love to hear more about that.
Yeah, I mean, that was fascinating because I thought, you know, World War One, it's British and it's Germany. It's Britain and Germany fighting together. But in the marine environment, that's not the case at all. So, you know, a lot of these ships had, international connections. A lot of them were French, Spanish, Norwegian, Russian. Obviously, there were German U-boats out there. But, you know, Greek registered vessels, you know, it's just astounding that European kind of or international dimension in terms of where the ships were from and who owned them, etc. But then you start looking at the crew lists as well, and that is just even more diverse. I mean, as is the case today, I mean, a lot of the crews were made up of people from Africa, you know, the Indian subcontinent, Far East, all these people that were hundreds of thousands of miles away from their homes who were on these ships travelling around the UK, keeping us supplied. And they lost their lives here, you know. And I think, you know, we've got to, as I say, I think it's important that we kind of recognise their efforts. The only way we can do that is try and work out what's what out there. So hopefully this is just a pilot in the Irish Sea and the start of something much bigger.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
For the future. And I think one of the important things to remember about all this work is that we're really fortunate that we have that technology now to do this. So the sonar technology. And that hasn't been around all the time. So we couldn't have done this in the 1950s and 60s. It was, you know, it just wasn't there. But unfortunately, all these wrecks are degrading as well. So the clock is really ticking. So although technology is getting better all the time, the condition of the wrecks is deteriorating quite rapidly. So I think we have a small window here now to kind of take this forward, build on it, and survey all these other vessels around the world, and, you know, apply our learning, share our learning with other organisations, so that we can try and do this before, you know, in 50 or 100 years' time, all that you'll have left on the seabed in most locations will be just an indistinguishable mound of, you know, broken metal and ballast and what have you. So really, this has to happen in the next decade or so, I would suggest, before it's too late to make any sort of reasonable, you know, 80 to 90% kind of identities on some of these ships, which is the object of the exercise.
It's incredible how much has been overlooked, as you were saying, and in terms of the families involved in maritime history of the war, another overlooked group are women, really. And how do they feature in the kind of research that you're doing?
Yeah, well, obviously there were many women who were passengers, because there were passenger cargo ships. So ships weren't just exclusively ferries. They obviously transported goods. But you would often have people, you know, travelling to and from ports. And so I think from our, I'm just looking at this sort of, I've done some ballpark calculations in terms of these ships that we've looked at, 300 sites or something like that. We are talking about the loss of over 3,000 people. You know, on average, it's 10 people per ship. Sometimes nobody perished, fortunately, but sometimes there were casualties that were, you know, in the 70s or even the hundreds, 80s, hundreds, you know, where people were lost in one event. Also, there are hospital ships out there. We've surveyed one of the hospital ships that was located off Wales. So there were nurses on board who'd kind of, you know, come across from, you know, West Indies and things like that. And so you know, they were professionals working on these ships as well. So, yeah, certainly women feature very strongly in this.
Definitely. The hospital ships is something that I wouldn't think about immediately when I do think about the First World War. So it's really interesting to hear about. And these projects are so community-based. For the people listening, is there any way that they can get involved if they think their community might have played a role?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the information that's out there now that you think might be just sitting there in someone's house that relates to some, as I say, long-lost uncle and what have you, and their time at sea and what have you. Some of the information that's come out of the U-Boat project, for example, was just astounding. This is, as I say, a small project, relatively speaking. But then we're using social media and obviously these museum exhibits and things to kind of communicate what we were doing. But social media, don't underestimate that, because I think somebody in Germany picked up on the project. And I think this is not my work directly, but it was associated with the kind of, you know, that, you know, the people's stories associated with these wrecks. But I think in one instance, a U-boat surfaced and told everyone to get off very politely before they sank the ship. Everyone got off safely, thank goodness. And then the Germans came on to destroy the ship with explosives rather than use a torpedo. There was a dog still on the boat. So they took, the U-boat crew took the dog off the vessel that had been left, put it on the U-boat, destroyed the ship and then sailed off home. And, you know, when the crew of the vessel that was lost got back to shore, they said, you know, they killed our dog, you know, you know, we lost a dog and everything. It was quite sad. Lottie, I think the name of the dog was Lottie. So this is a story. And then just coincidentally, someone in Germany kind of got back to us and said, I recognise that dog. And she actually had pictures. So the U-boat commander took the dog and took it home back to Germany. And I think it was his granddaughter or great-granddaughter had photographs of the dog with her in a garden in Germany, you know.
Wow, and it's just, that's such an incredible story.
Yeah. But I think that's just the tip of the iceberg in terms of some of the stories that haven't been told yet, you know, that this kind of work has the potential to tell. And I think, you know, that's really quite powerful as well as interesting, you know, about just humanity and that we sort of go through these awful things and we're told to do what we've got to do. And yeah, but I think it's just the tip of the iceberg. I'm sure there are many, many untold stories still out there. But it is critical that we identify the ship so that we have this kind of focal point, really, to bring these stories out. Because we can talk about the ships and we're lost, but you can't really relate them to anything until you actually have something tangible associated with, you know, a physical structure on the seabed. I think that's important. The other thing I have to say about our sonar work is, I mean, sonar is just sort of, as you say, giving a shape and an image of the ship as to how it is now, but there's lots of other information that's critical to supporting the identification of this, and that's marine archives. So we need plans of the ships, for example, to reconcile the identities. And this is where Innes' expertise comes in with all this. I mean, he's who works on marine archives and positional data, you know, Admiralty records, even Kriegsmarine U-boat records, effectively, to bring them all together, to kind of give that really strong evidence base to identify what a ship is, potentially. But by no means, that's not a guarantee still. I mean, it raises the possibility that this is the right shape, the right size, the right location. It's probably, but never definitely, until you actually have physical proof. And that's the one thing we haven't got. Because you can never be able to get that from some of these wrecks are in 100 and 150 metres water plus. So they're beyond, you know, you'd need the resources of NASA to get down to each one, basically. That will never happen because just economically it's not viable, I don't think. So, but being able to get to within, you know, a reasonable degree of confidence to kind of say that's probably that ship is better than what we've got at the moment. And so that's what we're aiming for. So I must emphasise that it's not, you know, work with science and absolutes. It's almost, but not quite, but it's better than what we've got, for sure.
Of course, and it is so important that we do kind of record the history and share it as well, because it's an important part of who we are and our national identity. Obviously, you have a lot of information on your website. Is there anywhere else that people can go to see findings physically?
Well, as I say, hopefully, you know, we'll try and expand on this. I mean, we're obviously thinking World War One, but it won't be too long before we start thinking about World War Two. So I'm hoping there will be other opportunities to get some funding to kind of, you know, bring the data out. The data is the data. I mean, you know, there are ways and means we can make that available, but I think it's the stories that kind of bring these things to life as well, and it's just finding ways and means to do that. I can say that today is actually fortunate that we're talking today, because I'm part of a project that's just been awarded a large bit of funding. It's through the Arts and Humanities Research Council. It's involving 15 universities. It's across the UK, and it's called Towards a National Collection. And part of our work or contribution to one of the projects under that funding will be to connect all these disparate museum and heritage collections, and it's kind of bringing all these collections together. So someone has the focal point, which is the sonar survey, the identified wreck in the Irish Sea, and then from that a kind of, you know, range of different links to all these, as I say, disparate collections. And I think if that works as we hope it will, you know, it will link all these individuals and communities to these physical structures, which will be great.
Yeah, that's fantastic news. Very exciting. I'll keep an eye on the website. It sounds like there's lots of interesting stuff on its way. And thank you so much for taking the time to speak to me today. It's been really, really interesting. And I always love to hear the work that's being done to uncover some of the history that has been overlooked.
No problem. Grateful to and happy to share all our interesting research, because it's so rewarding as well. So we do get a lot out of this.
Thank you for listening. That's it for today. If you enjoyed this episode, and indeed the whole series, please do go and find us on Instagram and YouTube and show your support. Please particularly take the time to check out the YouTube page, where we are doing fabulous things to present the maritime past in new ways. I particularly like the video that uses artificial intelligence to bring ships' figureheads to life. And of particular relevance to this episode is the video that animates a really complex technical plan of a first World War submarine, so that it made sense. To get even more involved, you can go and join the Society for Nautical Research for a small annual subscription fee. You receive 4 copies a year of our Mariner's Mirror journal, and you become part of a community dedicated to preserving and celebrating our maritime history. As always, we love to hear from you, so please do get in touch with any questions, comments, or thoughts about our podcasts. It has been a pleasure to delve deeper into Wales's maritime history with you. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.